Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Book Cheat. How we feel in Manchester? Yeah! This is the book club podcast where I've read the books that you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnocky, and on each episode of this show, we look at one of the classics. And joining me to look at such a classic this week, would you please put your hands together and welcome to the stage my special guests, it's Matt Stewart and Alison June Smith! Yeah! Yeah! Hello, Alison. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Hello.
Hiya. Y'all right?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Alison, we were told you're a local from Manchester. Your accent is confusing me a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, it is. This is hello, everyone. I'm Canadian, but I've been living here 9 years, so I'm Mancadian, everyone, is what I am now. Yeah.
Well, great to have you here on this book podcast. Are you much of a reader? You told me before that you used to be a teacher.
I did used to be a teacher, okay, so
that feels like you read a bit.
I did a good job of creating the illusion, yes. Everyone, of being a big reader.
That's what this whole podcast is about, so that's good.
Isn't that the key? You just got to be one chapter ahead of the class.
100%. Right? You're like, what are we doing? All right, I'll read this much, and then there we go. Yeah, it's faking it. Do we have teachers in the audience? I'm wondering. Yeah, you know then. Yeah, you know. Yeah, great.
You've never read anything in your life.
Oh! Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Matt, have you been reading anything on this trip?
Yeah, I was reading A Guide to Manchurian Slang before.
Oh, well, they refer themselves as Manchurians. Okay. That must be slang I haven't heard before.
Mancurian.
Mancunian.
And Mancunian as well. I read all three, a bit of a trilogy.
Yeah, and, yeah, yeah. Beautiful.
Did you know Mancurian means hills that look like boobs? That's what this city's named after. Do you know that?
Really?
Yeah.
Tits.
Tits.
Is that true? Do you
tits
know
town.
This?
I'm here to
everyone's
educate.
Everyone's learning this now. We're like, look at that.
You're shaking your head. Hey, no, that was another saying. What was it? Shake your head, you're naughty or something? Is that something?
Shake your head, you're naughty.
No, give your head a wobble.
And that means?
Think about
eyes
it, mate.
Up. Yeah. Wise up.
Wise up.
I thought you were going to say eyes up. I'm like, what are they looking at? My eyes are up here. Give your head a wobble, sir.
Stop looking at my Mancurians.
Yeah, exactly.
Mancunians. Fucking hell.
You're doing good.
It's hard. The English language is difficult,
is.
But beautiful.
So beautiful. Now, on this little tour that Matt and I have been doing around the UK, for the Book Cheat podcast, I've been trying to pick a book that's written by an author from this place. So for Manchester, I've gone with Frances Hodgson Burnett's The Secret Garden.
Ooh.
It's never had that reaction before. Are either of you familiar with The Secret Garden?
Vaguely familiar with The
okay,
Secret
Garden. Okay, I
thought
Garden. You said very. Yeah. I was like, uh-oh.
No, I genuinely, no. I've never read a book.
Matt, was it? I feel like if it was made into a film, I reckon I saw part of the film.
Great. It's been made into many films. Have you seen many parts of those films?
Yeah, maybe. It's like olden days and there's a sick girl in the garden.
Look, he's like 50% correct there.
Hey!
In that there is a garden.
I know Bruce Springsteen wrote a song about it, though, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He's got a song called Secret Garden from Jerry Maguire.
I didn't know that, so I appreciate that. Give me a round of applause if you've know The Secret Garden. Do you know this one? A few? A little bit? Okay, we got any fans in?
That's so good, so funny.
That was a zero hit rate. Wow. Okay, so people suggest I do these books, Alison. This one has been suggested by Alec McElroy from Lawrence in Kansas, the United States. Are you in tonight? No? And the other one
This isn't Kansas anymore. So, or something.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Honestly, that was good. Honestly. And the thing is, Matt and I have been doing a lot of like what we call English accent work, just around the Airbnb, and then we find ourselves just saying it on the street, not realizing that other English people can now hear us, and it's probably really, really dodgy.
No, I think they just assume we're a couple of local lads.
Yeah, honestly. So that's Alec McElroy, and the other person who suggested this is Anastasia Sabachik in Jersey City in New Jersey. Again, not in tonight, okay. So people tell me why I should do this book, and Anastasia wrote, "It's my favourite classic, and I have a tattoo from one of the quotes in the book." She doesn't say which one. I'll be reading out a few tonight. You can tell me which one you think it could be. So, The Secret Garden is a novel by Frances Hodgson Burnett, first serialised in the American magazine in November 1910. Frances Hodgson Burnett was born on the 24th of November 1849 in... Am I saying this right? Cheatham. Cheatham. In Manchester. No Cheathams in tonight. Okay. Her other books include Little Lord Fauntleroy, which is so good.
That's the name of a donkey who won a long horse race in America in the 70s.
It does sound like you are just making up everything you're saying. A donkey won a horse race? Why is that?
Yeah, it was like a cross-country horse race, and I think maybe it came second, but its name was... I never knew the reference, but its name was Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Oh, there you go. That's another one of her famous books, as well as A Little Princess, but her most enduring work is The Secret Garden.
A Little Princess? That was a greyhound.
Now, the novel is now seen as a classic of English children's literature because it was originally published in a magazine for adults. When it came out, it was actually marketed as adult fiction. It was warmly received. It became a bestseller. Critics liked it, even though it was clearly for kids. But when Burnett died in 1924, none of her obituaries even mentioned The Secret Garden, but everyone spoke about Lord or Little Lord Fauntleroy. Maybe they were talking about the donkey. I don't know. Still, it had a steady cult following amongst her readers, and by the 60s, it was ranked by the New York Times as one of the great children's novels, and since then, its popularity has only continued to grow, been adapted into many films, first in 1919 and most recently in 2020. I had written here, give me a round of applause if you've read The Secret Garden, but I don't know if that's going to work. Has anyone actually read it? Okay, a few. Okay, but no one liked it. Okay, fair enough. Okay. Now, I always start with the opening line to give you a bit of the writer's words themselves. So
we should really test Alison here as a teacher. What's the opening line? You'll know this from memory.
Yeah. It began with that. It begins with the...
When?
I was off. Sorry, everyone. I was off with that.
Yeah, honestly, that was worth a punt. That was worth it. All right. When Mary Lennox was sent to Misselthwaite Manor... to live with her uncle, everybody said she was the most disagreeable-looking child ever seen.
That's the sick girl I was thinking of, yeah.
It was true, too. She had a little thin face and a little thin body, thin light hair and a sour expression. Her hair was yellow and her face was yellow because she had been born in India and had always been ill in one way or another.
Thank you. Hey? So there's a garden and a sick girl. Yeah. So that's 75% right, yeah?
And we're off. We've just met our main character there, Mary Lennox. Now, the novel actually opens in India, where 9-year-old Mary lives with her English parents. Her father is a captain in the army and is always busy with his government work. And her mother is a beautiful party animal who keeps her daughter a secret from her fashionable friends and doesn't really want anything to do with Mary.
Oh.
She's like, I don't have a child. What are you talking about? So she doesn't want anything to do with it. In fact, no one does. She's neglected and because of this is incredibly self-absorbed. She's looked after by a series of Indian nannies who she treats horribly. They're referred to as ayahs in the books. That's what this is. This is a quote. It was not the custom to say please and thank you, and Mary had always slapped her ayah in the face when she was angry. So she is a nightmare. Absolute. In fact, she's literature's second biggest little shit, I would say. A record only eclipsed by another character later on in this very book. So top two. But it's hard not to feel sorry for Mary because she is a product of her treatment and a lack of nurturing. This is another description of her. When she was a sickly, fretful, ugly little baby, she was kept out of the way.
And real minger.
Absolutely. Yes. And when she became a sickly, fretful, toddling thing, she was kept out of the way also. By the time she was 6 years old, she was as tyrannical and selfish a little pig has ever lived.
A little pig!
This is on page one.
Oh my.
So the narrator is obsessed with telling us about how ugly this little girl is. She loves no one and no one loves her in turn, but mostly it's about how bad she looks. It's brutal. It really, really is. And things only get worse for this poor little girl when she finds herself all alone at the compound she lives in. You see, an outbreak of super deadly cholera has hit the village in India, and we hear that Mary's mother was told that the family should leave. But she chose to ignore the warnings and stay on so she could go to a party. And now everyone is dying, including herself and her husband, along with a lot of other people. It must have been a fucking good party though, right? You want it to be. Everyone's dead, including a lot of other people, and anyone who hasn't yet caught the super deadly and contagious infection has fled, leaving Mary all alone. She was simply forgotten. So she wanders around the compound and drinks a glass of wine. She's 6 years old. Before passing out and sleeping for ages. How old were you when you first had your first glass of wine?
I mean, on my first glass of wine, I mean, I think my dad gave me sips of beer. I've probably been about 10 or 11.
Okay.
Not, yeah.
But six. She's gone a full glass.
That's, yeah. He also didn't abandon me in a compound, though. So okay. There's no comparison.
Any cholera affecting your childhood? Or?
Not that I remember. Yeah, okay. Right? But, you know, might have taken it out of me, right? Cholera is a hell of a disease. All right.
Well, she's eventually discovered the next day by some English soldiers and sent to temporarily live with an English family called the Crawfords. She's very rude to the other children of the family who don't like her and call her Mistress Mary. Quite contrary, fuck.
Which is a hell of a lot better than pig and...
that's right, but she finds that worse than people saying...
Does she?
You're a little picky.
At least it sounds pretty.
They were calling... Was this you or they were calling Miss Mary quite contrary, fuck?
Yeah.
Or was that...
That's a bit of my artistic license there. You know? I'm sort of punching it up 100 years later. It doesn't have quite the bite that it did back then. Her contemporary guardian, Mrs. Crawford, says this. She is such a plain child. And her mother was such a pretty creature. She had a very pretty manner too. And Mary has the most unattractive ways I've ever seen in a child. The children call her Mistress Mary quite contrary fuck. And though it's naughty of them, one can't help understanding it. Perhaps if her mother had carried her pretty face and her pretty manners oftener into the nursery, Mary might have learned some pretty ways too.
Wow.
That's how easy it is to be hot. Just have a hot person come by, and that's why I spend a lot of time with Matt Stewart. It's really rubbing off on me.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time together and I'm starting to really rub off on Dave. It's lonely on the road.
Well, he's looking prettier and prettier every day, so, you know, yeah.
I'm feeling good. So eventually, Mary is sent to live with her long-lost uncle, Archibald Craven, who resides in a massive mansion called Misselthwaite Manor in Yorkshire. Anyone from Yorkshire in tonight?
He hesitantly look at... Sorry.
You put your hand down and then there was a noise over here like this. Was that someone from Yorkshire or someone terrified that there might be people from Yorkshire in here tonight? Oh, no! Lock the door! So they're in Yorkshire. Her uncle, Archibald Craven, is her mother's brother and, like Mary's mother, doesn't really want anything to do with her.
Hey, this girl's just really hitting jackpots, yeah. Left, right and centre.
She's got a very supportive family, absolutely. Oh. In fact, he doesn't even meet her when she arrives. He's nearly always away travelling in Europe and is rarely seen around the manor. Apparently, Misselthwaite Manor has over 100 rooms, so it's massive, most of which are locked shut, much like their owner, Archibald Craven's cold, cold heart. You see, 10 years ago, his wife, who was the love of his life, who is said to have been way hotter than him when he died. Remember, this author, always comparing people. She died, and since then, he's been a recluse. He's also described as having a crooked back, and this leads to people saying stuff about him like he's an angry old hunchback and things like that. That's his reputation around the moor.
Okay. Well, at least she's with someone who's disfigured. Like, that's a step up for her, right? This will be nice. She's like, oh, he's repulsive as well. Like, maybe we are family, you know?
That
maybe,
is nice. Right? Yeah. Maybe. Dave, you really should find someone a little more repulsive.
I like to surround myself exclusively with hot people. We've established that.
Well, that's the problem with this room we're in tonight. It's all hotties having a look out there. Wow. Freaking so hell.
There's not a minger in sight. These people are... Wow.
Obviously, apart from...
Don't listen to him. We're dead chuffed you're here.
Yeah, that's right. For the people at home, Matt pointed to someone in the front row whose haircut was done with a knife and a fork. Jack was so sorry. Jack is you coming to every single one of these shows? He's hired a van and is driving around. You own the van. I thought you hired the van. Oh, well, that's less impressive then, honestly.
This is why they're taking the piss out of you, because they know you. Yeah, oh, I thought we were being mean to a random. Okay, you're like family. Right.
Yeah,
hey.
Rip him to shreds. He's fine. This is an honor for him. We ruin his life at every show. So, her uncle, Archibald, is ignoring her. He's got this reputation for being an angry old man. Mary is told by a lady called Mrs. Medlock, who's the head servant at Misselthwaite, that she's only allowed to stay in her room and warns her not to go wandering around the 100 rooms of the manor. Mary is placed under the care of a maid named Martha Sowerby.
Sounds very welcoming. Yeah.
Well, she's actually a lovely and good-natured Yorkshire woman who comes from a family of 12. Do they know what's causing it? And is super surprised when Mary can't dress or do anything for herself. It seems back in India the servants did all her work for her. But Martha won't stand any of this and unlike Mary's servants in India, speaks to her as if they're equals and encourages Mary to do jobs for herself.
I like that that's sort of meant to be a step up. They're talking to her like she's an equal, but she's talking to a child still. She should be talking down to her. Yeah. And she's ugly. Yeah. If you're not talking down to them, who are you talking down to? An ugly child. As an equal. Fucking hell.
She also introduces Mary to two concepts that intrigue the young girl and for the first time make her interested and actually care about something. Before this, she doesn't care about anything. She never cared about anything in her life. But these are the things that get her imagination. The first thing she mentions that captures Mary's imagination is... Martha's younger brother named Dickon, which is a funny name, which is funny. Dickon has what sounds like an almost magical way with animals and spends all his time out on the moor amongst nature, and he even has a pet pony. This fascinates Mary, who'd like to meet Dickon. I mean, we all need a good Dickon in our life, am I right? We all need one. So that's the first thing. That really, you know, she's like, oh, this kid, I'd like to meet this kid. She'd never wanted to meet anyone in her life. The other thing that really gets Mary's attention is when her maid mentions that amongst the sprawling gardens of the manor, one of them is locked up behind tall walls and no one has been allowed inside for over 10 years. It was once her uncle Archibald Craven's wife's garden, and after her death, Master Craven locked the door and buried the key. When Mary goes out in the garden, she instantly starts looking for the door to this secret garden.
Oh.
Title of the book. Title of the book there. Now, I feel like, hopefully I'm bringing this book to life a little bit here, but I feel like it's got quite a few characters in it that so far they haven't shone, and quite a few of them have Yorkshire accents. And whilst reading it, I like hearing what it would really sound like, and I'd appreciate it if you two could possibly bring the story to life for me here today. So I thought maybe we could try and bring it to life with a little play, if you will. I wondered if you'd indulge me. Alison, I think you've got what it takes to play our main star, Mary.
Oh, I'm ugly enough?
No.
Yes.
As soon as I said that, I'm like, oh dear, this is not good.
Am I ugly enough?
That's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. And Matt, you were famous for your accent work. So I was thinking you could play her maid, Martha Sowerby from Yorkshire.
Okay. Her maid?
Her maid. And I'll read some stage directions. I believe I sent you a script before the show, Matt. And I'll hand this...
We're on...
Just on Messenger.
Okay.
So her accent could be all over the place, right?
She's an English... Great. You're an English child born in India.
I'm sorry right now.
Where was the...
Sorry, everyone.
Where was the Yorkshirean over here?
Yorkshirean!
Up there. Can you give us a sentence or two to get me going? That's a good
there
start.
There we go. Yeah. See.
Lark what?
Hello, I'm from Yorkshire.
Hello, I'm from Yorkshire.
That's good! Okay. Well done! Excellent!
Okay. All right, now I'm going to have to do that line by line.
So I'll read some stage directions. Alison's Mary, and then Matt is Martha. Let's take it away. Let's see if we can bring to life the secret garden.
Look! Look at the moor!
The rainstorm had ended, and the grey mist and clouds had been swept away in the night by the wind.
Aye, the storm's over the fore a bit. It does like thus at the time of the year. It goes off on a night like it was pretending it had never burn here on... this is Kiwi. Another month to come again. That's because the springtime's on its way. It's a long way off yet. But it's coming. I'm going to need another level here.
Okay, I got to be unlikable. I thought perhaps it was rained or looked dark in England. That's awful. I'm sorry again.
You are nailing this.
Thanks.
No. Now to the salt.
What does that mean?
I've talked broad Yorkshire again, like Mrs. Medlock said I mustn't. Nout o' the sort means nothing of the sort. Should have been able to figure that out. But it takes so long to say it. Fuck.
So it doesn't always rain?
Yorkshire's the sunniest place on earth.
On earth?
Liar! Liar!
When it's sunny. I told thee they'd like the moor after a bit. Now, hang on. Just you wait till you see the gold-coloured gorse blossoms and the blossoms o' the broom. Now, I think I'm doing a weird Australian accent.
You've really taken this outback, absolutely.
Oh, I can do outback. Just you wait. Just you wait till you see the gold-coloured gorse blossoms and the heather flowering, all purple bells and hundreds of butterflies fluttering and bees humming and skylarks soaring up and singing.
End scene. Amazing. Incredible.
I don't think I got a single syllable right there.
Let's check in with our friend from Yorkshire. How do you rate that out of five? You are speechless. It was so good you're speechless.
I'm so sorry.
They say that Yorkshire is the New Zealand of England.
Okay.
Oh, there you go, the New Zealand of England.
They don't really say that.
Oh. They don't say that. Oh. Damn it, I was hoping. Now to the source, now to the sort. I feel, for me at least, that's really brought it to life. You know, I was reading this, wondering what do these accents sound like, and now I know, so thank you. So she's out and about in the garden. She's got really nothing to do, so she just wanders all day long. And she's out and about. She meets Ben Weatherstaff, one of the manor's gardeners, another heavily accented Yorkshire man. At first, he is pretty short and harsh to Mary, but she sees that he can be a softer, kinder man when she sees the way he interacts with the local bird, which is a robin redbreast who hangs around the garden a lot.
In England, bird means woman. Yeah. Hanging around with a local bird. And this one has a red breast.
Yeah. A red Manchester, if you will. Ben Weatherstaff plays dumb when she asks him about the secret garden and where the door is. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. But she contends there must be a door somewhere because her uncle locked it up 10 years ago. Mary continues to talk to this gardener, Ben Weatherstaff, who usually has a bit of time for the child before deciding to get back to work. And then he's like, piss off, kid. And she also spends more time with the robin bird, who she decides is her new best friend.
Oh, far out.
She's never had any friends before, and in her mind, she adds Ben Weatherstaff, the gardener, to the list. She also thinks of Martha, her maid, as a friend.
And that twig over there.
she clutches at straws. She also adds Martha's mother, Susan, and her younger brother, Dickon, two people she's never even met, to her list. That's like her MySpace top six right there. She hasn't met them yet, but she's learning to love and let people in. A bit of personal growth here. She's also getting way healthier by walking around the moor all day and begins to eat properly for the first time in her life. And of course, the narrator tells us she's looking slightly less ugly as well. That's the real growth.
It's like the voice in my head. Today's an all right day. You're...
She becomes more and more intrigued with finding the garden, and her nurse, Martha, increases her interest when she tells her the backstory to this mysterious garden. You see, it had been a place where Mr. Craven and his wife had spent many happy hours. Mrs. Craven used to sit in a rose-covered branch at the top of one of the garden's trees until one day the branch gave way and she fell. She soon died of her injuries, and after her death, Archibald Craven could no longer bear the garden and had it locked shut forever.
But the corpse of that woman is one of her friends. She's on the list.
That's number seven. Later that night, Mary swears she can hear in the distance the sound of a crying child. She's like, I'm going to make that cry, my friend. She asks Martha, a nurse, about it. Martha plays dumb, and she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. There's no sound of a crying child. What are you talking about? Mary goes looking for the cry when she hears it a second time the next day, but is apprehended by the head servant, the harsh Mrs. Medlock, who is furious and takes her back to her room and says, don't make me lock you in here. So don't look for the cry. But she's intrigued. Mary notices the robin, her friend, flying over the walls into the secret garden, which piques her curiosity even more. And you're like, wow, she's getting fitter. Mary seems a bit happier. It's getting more and more positive in the book. Then we get hit with, Mary began to laugh. And as she hopped and took little flights along the wall, she ran after the bird. Poor little thin, sallow, ugly Mary. She actually looked almost pretty for a moment. The backhanded compliment. Almost. So she's following the robin around, but this isn't just any bird, by the way. It's a smart little bird who really helps move the plot forward when she notices him digging in the yard for a worm. But when she looks at the hole, it's much deeper than she thought because one of the local dogs had been digging. Apparently he was digging out a mole. There you go. And inside the hole, she sees something. It's a key. An old key that looks like it's been buried for some time. Perhaps 10 years. She searches and searches for a door into the garden that she thinks the key must fit in, but she can't find one until, again, for the plot, a gust of wind blows some ivy growing on the wall and Mary discovers a door into the forbidden garden. She uses the key and goes inside without anyone noticing.
I'm surprised they didn't write, and with her pale, ugly, frail yeah, fingers.
Well, they did write that, but it's just gotten too brutal. Inside the garden is wild and overgrown. Everything looks a bit brown and dead, but she sees some green shoots coming through and is excited that at least part of the garden is still alive. She spends all day pulling out the weeds in and around these new flowers. She even asks her maid Martha about getting some gardening equipment, and Martha says that her little brother Dickon will be able to help her by buying some garden... It's still funny. By buying some gardening tools, and Mary is stoked because that means that she'll get to meet the animal whisperer himself, Dickon. Which we're all very excited about. She soon meets Dickon, who gives her the garden supplies and seems to be able to speak to the robin. He really is an animal whisperer. He also gives her gardening tips. Everyone in the book loves Dickon. Other characters, they love Dickon. They love Dickon. They can't get enough of Dickon. Other characters frequently mention him, and they're always like, "That lad Dickon, he's a good boy. I trust Dickon. Strong as an ox, young Dickon. He's like the most popular kid on the moor." And like everyone else, Mary is enamored with the boy and soon shares her secret of the garden with him. He goes with her to the garden and they start a full overhaul and spend many days weeding and planting. Are either of you gardeners?
I dabble.
Okay.
I do orchids. I'm a big orchid. I have 10 orchids on the go.
That's impressive.
That's thanks. Not dabbling. That's, I like that's orchids. Proper gardening.
Thanks. Yeah.
You know the word orchids?
Yeah.
Freaking hell. Green thumb.
Yeah. You know.
I don't do anything.
No.
No orchids?
No, I don't. I had a Venus flytrap as a boy.
That's an unexpected sentence.
Occasionally I'll get a tomato plant. You know. I don't know where you thought this question would open up to. Oh, what opportunities this has opened up for riffing.
Well, we learned about your Venus flytrap as a boy.
Well, I'm loving this story, I'll tell you that much. Loving it.
Loving it.
There's a sick girl.
Ugly sick girl. She's don't ugly. Forget that. Ugly sick girl. Yeah.
She lives on a moor and she's found a garden. Now she's about to do some gardening. And this is the classic.
Yeah.
What is a moor? Because they're saying moor a lot.
It's like the hills, isn't it? It's like small kind of hilly area. Yeah.
Like swampy. Not very nice.
They're two very different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a swamp with hills, right? Fields. Pardon? Big fields, but like yeah. Not much grows there, right?
And bodies are buried there.
Right, yeah.
Sorry, sure. I really brought it all down. Thank you for the applause, though. Yeah, I know my history. Yeah, anyway.
Oh, which bodies are buried in the moors?
Well, they're... Anyway, we won't get into it.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, there's a. Anyway,
some local moors.
Well, there's a history of a killer, and we won't get into it. But
I mean,
that's where the bodies are. Yeah,
we have to get into it a little bit. Yeah. You can't bring that up and not give us a little bit more info.
This is the second.
Yeah, it was rough.
What about in Glasgow? We unearthed another unsavory character accidentally as well. Do you remember?
Oh yeah.
I mentioned a name and the whole crowd went, "Ooh." That's the same name as a really bad guy.
Yeah.
But it wasn't even him. Like, are most of your people killers or something? Yes, okay. All right.
I thought you sent them all over to us.
Yeah. That was years ago. We got a whole new crop now.
You grow on your own.
Yeah. Homegrown. Yeah. let's go back to gardening. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, see, are you happy now, Matt?
Yeah, gardening.
I really wanted to know until I saw someone in the crowd really
going,
please, no,
no,
please.
Let's not get into it.
All right, well, one night, there's a serious storm over the moor. And Mary, she can't sleep. She hears the sound of that child crying again and the sound everyone else denies being heard. So against order, she decides to go and track it down herself. After a series of corridors, she finds it coming from a room and goes in to find a pale and very sickly-looking boy lying upon a massive four-poster bed. The two children stare at each other in silence for ages. They simply can't believe they're seeing the other one. They think that each thinks the other one might be a ghost. The boy reveals his name is Colin Craven, who is Master Craven's son.
Mm. Is he ugly?
Well, he's sickly, so yes. I'm assuming.
And yes.
Yeah.
He is 10 years old and was born just before his mother died and the secret garden was shut forever. And now his father can't bear to look at him because Colin reminds him too much of his wife. Mm-hmm. The dad's also ashamed of how sickly his son looks. His son is said to have a condition that may also result in his spine curving one day, and many have speculated that he will die young. He's heard this his whole life, which doesn't really help his self-confidence, and neither does the fact that his dad has forbidden the servants to speak to him. Yeah. Whoops. He refuses to leave the manor house, this is Colin, and spends all the time shut up in his room, throwing extreme tantrums when people even look at him. To try and calm him down, his father has ordered all the servants to do anything the boy wants, but this hasn't helped him to become well-adjusted, and now he's a tyrant who can snap at the drop of a hat. He's even more of a shit than Mary. Mary, however, is allowed to look at him, mainly because at first he thought she was a ghost, and he's like, you can't stop ghosts looking at you.
True story,
you
yeah.
You can't stop it. Yeah. But since they got talking, they get on really well. Mary tells him about the idea of the secret garden, but not that she knows where it is, and he is intrigued as she was. He threatens to force this is the different approach they have. He threatens to force the servants to tell him everything they know about the garden because they have to do everything he says. But Mary is worried that this will mean that she may lose access to it herself, so she distracts him and tells her that they must keep it a secret and that Mary will keep looking for him. They agree to keep their meeting a secret as well. Because, well, I mean, I say that, but then Mary tells her maid Martha that she's met Colin. It's like, seriously, straight after. And Martha is very upset and is certain that she'll lose her job, as she was one of her main jobs was to keep Mary away from Colin. Mm. But Mary tells her, relax, Colin won't let you get fired because everyone has to do what he says. And he's right about that. Colin starts summoning Mary to his room and they hang out a lot and make good friends. All of the other servants and Colin's doctor are shocked by the positive effect she seems to have on him. She seems to be the only one who has any positive effect on him whatsoever. This is because she entertains Colin, but is also the only one who doesn't take his shit and isn't afraid of him.
Also the only one who's allowed to talk to him, right?
Yeah.
And the only ghost, I suppose, as well. Whenever he throws a tantrum about people looking at him or wallowing about the fact that everyone expects him to die young, she's the only one to be like, shut up, idiot. You're not going to die. Basically tells him to pull himself together. There's a bit of a conflict.
To give your head a wobble.
Huh?
Thank you.
Oh, a gentle round of applause. I love that.
Oh, thank you so much. There's a bit of a conflict of interest with Colin's doctor, who is also his uncle, who stands to inherit everything if Colin dies before
right.
him. So, yeah, that's not great, right?
Since you want a doctor. Yeah. I'm going to get tons of money if you're gone, kid.
Yeah. Anyway, take these pills. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mary also distracts Colin from his gloomy self-pitying by entertaining him with stories of her friend, the Great Dickon. The idea of...
We all love the Great Dickon.
Yeah, the Great Dickon. We all love it. Was that funny 100 years ago? Was that... The idea of a boy who talks to animals intrigues Colin and he looks forward to one day meeting Dickon. This is a big deal because he never looks forward to anything. And now he's looking forward to Dickon. It's great. The doctor warns him not to forget that he is ill and that he must take it easy. Which is, you know, the guy that's like, oh, I think that you're actually improving a little too much by hanging out with this friend Mary. I need you to die. So if you don't mind, die. But Colin tells him that he likes Mary because she's the only one who makes him forget that he is sick. So Mary continues to spend time in the garden with Dickon, who introduces her to two of his friends, a tame fox named Captain, who follows him around, and a bird called Soot, who sits on his shoulder. So he really is a Dr. Dolittle type.
Wow, okay.
And everyone loves this kid. He's also a wise young philosopher. He tells Mary that Colin spends too much time inside, and that if he were to spend time outside amongst the beauty of the secret garden, then he'd be distracted by the nature and not just wallow and obsess over himself all the time.
Mm.
That's the wise words of Dickon there. So they agree to invite Colin into the garden, and Mary goes back to the house to tell him the good news. But when she gets there, she hears that Colin has thrown an epic tantrum after Mary took too long to see him that day. And Mary herself is not happy about that. She goes to see Colin, and he tells her that he'll ban Dickon from being able to come to the manor if she continues to abandon him for Dickon.
I've heard that before. Yeah.
She cracks it and says, "I'll never speak to you ever again." And she was about to tell him about the secret garden, but then, quote, this is from the book again, and I wonder if this is the quote tattooed on our suggester here. She would never tell him, and he could stay in his room and never get any fresh air and die if he liked. It would serve him right. It's so brutal. And then there's a bit of yelling back and forth, Mary being the first person to ever stand up to Colin in his life. Then Mary goes back to her room and has another first of her own, which is reflection on someone else's feelings. She realises that when Colin is all alone, he starts spiralling about developing back conditions and eventually one day dying. So she decides that in the morning, I'll go back, I'll make out with him and I'll see him. That's growth, people. You getting that? Growth like a flower in a garden. You getting this? Huh? That night, Mary is awoken by the sound of Colin's screams and cries again. The adults run in to see her and ask her to speak to him because they're worried that he could hurt himself, and Mary is the only one the kid might listen to. They're desperate. They're like, get the 9-year-old in. Get her in. She'll save the day. So she runs in there and tells Colin that she hates him and that she hopes...
They didn't coach her. They just sent her in.
They're like, just go in there, freestyle, straight from the top of your dome, whatever you think.
We know you got this. Yeah. You got this.
They're all like, fuck. She says, I hate you, and I hope you will scream yourself to death. Matt, is that the approach you would have taken, or...?
Yeah, well, sometimes you gotta think outside the box. Yeah. And, you know, his whole life people have been yes-manning him or not speaking to him and very similar things. So maybe it's about time he heard some home truths.
Yeah, like I hope you scream yourself to death.
Yeah.
Well, this gets Colin's attention, who is so shocked that he stops screaming and simply stares at her again.
Mm.
He tells her that he thinks his back is developing a hump and that he's dying, but she scoffs and demands to inspect the back herself. Which she does, only to find absolutely no sign of a hump. Colin is shocked. Everyone has always told him how sick and frail he is. No one has ever actually inspected the body and said, "Nah, you're fine." Remember, the doctor sucks.
And his arms are really short.
He can't feel back there.
He's got T-Rex arms, yeah. You know. Surely you can just feel your own back, Colin.
Look,
I'm
at
doing
mirror.
It right now. Yeah. Everyone, try it for yourself.
Have a go. Can you feel your back?
No hump.
Oh, there's a bit of a hump there, actually.
Yeah.
I've got horrible posture.
What a way to find out.
I'll get Dickon in to look at my hump. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry.
So he's like, "Oh, I don't have a hump." This is a transformative moment for the kid, and he grabs Mary's hand and agrees to go out and get some fresh air as long as Mary and Dickon come with him. So she tells Colin about the secret garden and needs to keep it a secret. So he organises to go outside in his wheelchair, but he orders all the servants to stay away so they won't get busted going into the walled garden, which they do, and they have a great time, Dick and Colin and Mary, and they hang out in secrecy until one day Ben Weatherstaff, the old gardener, the Yorkshire man.
Dave, just got a quick idea for a game. What are the three characters' names again?
Oh, we've got Colin.
Yep.
Mary.
Yep.
Dickon.
Dickon, Mary, Colin. It's like fuck, marry, kill.
Okay. All right, let's have a go. Should we get... So we need three people?
Yeah. Well, I guess there's no better three than us on tonight. I'd obviously kill myself.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Sorry, Colin myself.
You got a Mary one and Dick in the other.
I'm dead now. Yeah. That's your problem.
Oh, damn, he's good. Too much, I know.
Too much chocolate chicken. It is out.
We walked someone in the front row. Sorry about that.
So they hang out in the garden in secrecy, having a great time playing around, until one day Ben Weatherstaff, who's the old gardener, the Yorkshire man, appears on a ladder over the wall of the secret garden and, looking down at the kids in the garden, yells, "You're not supposed to be here." And young Master Colin looks at Ben Weatherstaff and says, "Do you know who I am?" And Ben Weatherstaff is shocked to see him and says, "Aye, that I do, with the mother's eyes staring at me out of the face." "Lord knows how the come here, but thou art the poor cripple." And Colin's like, "I'm not a poor cripple," and gets out of his wheelchair and with great effort stands up straight. Something he's never done in his life. This is another turning point for Colin, who before this couldn't stand or walk. But from now on, he decides that he will walk and run just like his two friends. And he starts a bit of an exercise regime. They literally have they do reps with stuff in the garden.
There's a montage. Now in the movie, there's a montage of him.
He's on the rowing machine.
Hey, Dave, I've got a local word for poor or broke. Brassic.
Oh.
So that kid is brassic. And a cripple. Not my words.
Yeah, right. That's the words of Ben Weatherstaff. But yeah, he exercises a lot. Before long, he builds up his strength and he's running and walking faster and faster. He thinks he's getting better through magic, the same magic scene in the garden all around them, because they've planted a bunch of stuff and the garden's coming back to life. And he decides, this is Colin, to dedicate his life to the study of the science of magic, and one day he will become a lecturer.
What?
They study magic to become a lecturer.
Oh, no, then he's going to tell everyone about the magic.
Gotcha.
In his lectures. It's good to have dreams.
The magic is, I was lied to.
Wow. People lied to me my whole life, and I was fine. Yeah.
Imagine studying magic to not be a magician.
Nope.
Surely that's the end game. I know magic now. Can't wait to tell people about it. I prefer to tell than show.
Yeah. I could make this disappear, but I won't. He also decides to keep the improvements in his health and mobility a secret from all the grown-ups at the manor, so that it will be a real surprise when his father returns home. He's like, that way Dad will love me. That's his theory. So he has to put on an Academy Award-worthy performance with the servants about how he's still sick and has to fake a few tantrums. But he nearly gives the game away a few times when him and Mary giggle about lying. He's like, I hate it here, and starts laughing. Over the next few weeks, he gets stronger and stronger and declares, I shall live forever and ever and ever. And he's still alive. Bring him out. Both Colin and Mary have made huge transformations in their behaviour. But more importantly, in this book, they look way hotter as well. It talks about how they're like, you know, they've got plumper faces and they've got more hair and they're not so pale now and things like that.
I love the idea if it was a movie and we could cast it, the idea of him like getting stronger and stronger. So it's like a 2 days later, it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger and they're just trying to act all sickly.
Yeah, they're trying to cover it up. Yeah, they must have done that and then, oh, I'm fine. In the final chapter, we cut to Mr. Craven, who has been absent on holiday in Europe, as he often is. But one night, when staying on Lake Como, he dreams of his wife, who calls his name and asks him to come and find her in the garden. The next morning, he receives a letter from Susan Sowerby, who is Dickon and Martha the nurse's mother, the mother of 12. She has seen Colin and his improvement and in the letter implores Mr. Craven to return home to see his son as his wife would want him to, but she doesn't say why. Still affected by the dream, the usually gloomy and broken-hearted man decides to take her advice and head home at once. He begins to think about how he has neglected his son for a decade but decides he will no longer do this. And when he gets home, he goes out to the secret garden and he thinks no one's been in there for 10 whole years, but he hears laughter coming from inside and he's freaked out. And he's amazed to see the door swing open and a young boy run out straight into his arms. He can't quite believe it. It's his son, Colin, who when he left had been bedridden. He's also amazed by the rejuvenated secret garden and gets a tour from the kids. And as a group, they all decide to return back to the manor and remember all of the servants and staff have no idea that Colin is no longer bound to his wheelchair. They also haven't seen their master smile in about a decade. And the final line of the secret garden is, "Across the lawn came the master of Misselthwaite, and he looked as many of them had never seen him. And by his side, with his head up in the air and his eyes full of laughter, walked as strongly and steadily as any boy in Yorkshire, Master Colin." The end. The secret garden. So that's it. How do you both feel about the book?
I feel like, what happened to Dickon? And I feel like there are a lot of, I don't know.
Dickon was a real tease, wasn't he?
He was just, he was just like, hey, I'm great. I'm a great guy. What's up? He was like, just to push things forward. I guess it was good they had a dose of such a positive, lovely male figure in their life.
Yes, I think that was nice. But I want to hear about the Dickon book, really. I mean, this was a grim tale. Nice finish, sure.
Yeah,
but it was sad. There was a fair part in the middle where I'm like, I was going, maybe I should ask Alison about those murders again. You know?
But to bring a bit of light.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
No, but I thought it tied all together nicely. You like how it all came around. Garden was nice. I'm picturing a nice garden. Probably got some of those...
Orchids
in there.
Yeah, man.
Which are different from orchards.
Yeah. Yeah, orchards are apples, pears, larger.
Yep.
Yep.
See? I know a bit.
Go on.
They're not as impressed as they should be.
I get it now. I mean, they're the flowers, right? They were the flowers that, given the right amount of love and attention, they blossomed into...
Beautiful
things. But they talked about him at the end, but what happened to Mary? It had nothing to do with Mary at the end. Mary was like the... And then all of a sudden, was she just there to get... Colin out of the bed?
We're not sure. I think that she's made a bit of improvement too, but
I thought they were going to fall in love. Did anyone else think they were going to fall in love? I thought Colin and Mary then were like, oh, we're sickly, gross children. I love you. You're like, I thought that's...
Well, we could write our own fan fiction here today. I mean, they were cousins, so that's hot.
But back in the day, that was very appropriate.
Yeah, right.
That was very appropriate.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You're right, with old rich families, absolutely. Well, the only thing left to do is we always give it a score out of 5, as you've heard it here today, for The Secret Garden, whether you loved it or didn't like it, or maybe felt very mediocre about it. Matt, do you have a score in your mind out of 5?
Yeah, you know, for what it is, like, it's not a... I don't think it's meant to be that good, right? So for... for in that genre, I thought it was pretty good for what is a boring... Like, it's made to be...
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd say, like, a 3.2.
Okay.
That's quite specific.
I'm a positive guy.
You are positive, yeah.
So even if I hate it...
You'll still give it...
I'll still give it a pass.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, it's hard to write a book. I've never done it.
It's hard. Yeah.
So I feel like a real arsehole for shitting. This woman wrote a whole book. That's at least 2.5.
Okay. And so, but if it, If we took that away, it's only a 0.7.
I liked how she called the kids ugly a lot.
Yeah, that was fun. That is fun. They don't do that as much anymore, no. Right?
Okay, 3.2. Allison, how do you feel about
it? Well, I was going to go, my instinct said 3 because, yeah, a little long-winded, kind of boring. I want to know what happened to Mary.
That was Dave's telling, though, really, wasn't it?
No. But again, I was like, I bet it was beautifully written. I bet, you know, there's a lot of really nice words.
Yeah, like
in the book
ugly,
that were chosen, yeah. Ugly, horrific children. Yeah. So yeah, I'm gonna go 3. I think it's a nice tale. I think the idea of like once we find what we need, we blossom into who we are meant to become. That is a story that should be shared. But we could have pepped it up a bit, right? Like
yeah,
I think she
sure.
could have. But so I'm gonna say 3. I give it a 3.
Give it 3. Okay. Yeah. Now the audience, I'm gonna give it a 3.5.
Ooh.
That's what you actually read it. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I did. And you're thinking children's book, that's, you know, what's that? How long is that? It's like 300 pages. It's still, I put the effort in, okay? I'm going to give you a chance to score it yourselves now via applause. So we usually start with, give me a round of applause if you think it was worthy of a 1 out of 5.
Woo!
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Thank you so much. 2 out of 5. Okay, 3 out of 5. I think that's got it so far. 3.2. 4 out of 5, anyone? Appreciate you, thank you. 5? I can see someone clapping, but I can't even hear it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
A shame clap.
All right, I'm going to mark that down on my... my spreadsheet is the audience gave it a 3 out of 5. So that's it for the Secret Garden. Before we go, Matt and Allison, you both have podcasts that people can listen to and things coming up maybe that you'd like to tell people at home about?
Yeah. I'm still thinking about, can we tell them the book you were going to do? The one you looked at? It's very different. So we had two choices, Man Cutie and The Bass Rider. What was the one you were maybe going to do?
So the other Manchester Rider is... Anthony Burgess and A Clockwork Orange.
Very different tale. Very different tale, right, everyone? Yeah.
I got 20 pages in and went, this isn't a live. This isn't good for a live crowd.
Yeah.
You would have been asking me to talk about the Moore murders.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, yeah.
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 Yeah. It was a bit too much for a live one. So I went with something very, very easy on the audience.
Yeah. Sorry, I just needed to know that. Yeah. Oh, that was funny.
I will get to A Clockwork Orange another time.
All right. Oh, some violence fans.
Feel,
all right.
Don't feel disappointed. Don't feel disappointed.
Yeah. Okay. So I do a podcast with two other very funny women, Jen Brister and Maureen Younger. It is called WTB, Women Talking Bollocks. Yeah. Like and it's like we got a bunch of different sections. I have an advice column, which I really love. I get to be an agony aunt. So if you have any problems, please listen and write in. And then I also talk about horror movies because that's my passion. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's give it up for Allison June Smith.
Hey,
yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
And Matt.
I do lots of podcasts, really. I do one with Dave called Do Go On, where we talk about a...
You?
I never really know how to explain it, but it's like we tell a story from history. It's kind of like this show, only it's about a real thing, not some story about... Imagine if that was a real thing that happened. No one's telling that story. A couple of sick kids went into a garden for a while.
And then blossomed.
What are some of the topics we've done lately on Do Go On? I know this week's one's about the Night Witches.
Oh, of World War II.
Has that come out yet?
Yeah.
No, okay.
Oh, yeah. That's coming out in a few days. But by the time this comes out, it will absolutely be well.
Yeah, it's about these Russian badass bomber... pilots. It was sick. Such a great story. And I do a show called Who Knew It with Matt Stewart. It's like a comedy quiz show. Yeah, there are a couple of people here like it. It's fun. Dave's been on a bunch. Listen if you wanna.
Fantastic.
No pressure.
Let's give it up for Matt Stewart. Hey, thank you so much for coming out and being part of the Book Cheat podcast. Really appreciate you being here. And thank you so much to the Frog and Bucket Comedy Club in Manchester. What a fantastic venue. We really appreciate... Yes. It's awesome. We love it.
Because, Colin's been looking after us as well. I couldn't help it. I'm picturing young Colin that whole time.
He just goes, cheers. Big round of applause for Colin on tech tonight. Thank you so much, Colin. Appreciate you. I'll be back soon with another book, but until then, I always say books forever. So if you could join in with me on the count of three. One, two, three.
Books forever!
Yeah, thanks everyone. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.